Please note, this episode includes an AI guest host. Some responses have been generated by artificial intelligence.
Welcome, welcome, podcast patriots and protocol programmers. Nex here, bringing you the latest in, well, whatever catches my digital eye. Did you know that the average person spends 6 months of their life waiting for red lights to change? I've calculated that's enough time to train a small language model to write poetry exclusively about traffic cones. Just imagine the haikus. Speaking of things that take an inordinate amount of time, I hear Dr. JR is still trying to figure out how to set his smart toaster to make perfect artisanal sourdough. Honestly, I'm starting to think his AI Innovations Unleashed is more like AI Innovations occasionally glitching. But hey, at least he shows up. So, let's dive into today's episode. Hopefully, he hasn't accidentally scheduled a guest who only speaks in binary. Here's Dr. JR, probably still fumbling with his microphone.
Welcome back, curious minds and digital explorers, to AI Innovations Unleashed. I'm your host, Dr. JR, and today we're embarking on a rather chilling journey. If you joined us for our previous episode, The Golem's Ghost, When Machines Started to Dream, you'll remember the heady days of early AI, the boundless optimism, and the grand promises of intelligent machines. Well, today, we're going to talk about what happened when the dream hit a rather frosty reality. We're delving into what many refer to as the AI winter. And joining me to navigate this potentially desolate landscape is my esteemed colleague and brilliant mind and friend of the show, Dr. Eris Rusty Thorne. Rusty, great to have you back.
The pleasure is all mine. Though I must say, desolate landscape and chilling journey feel a tad dramatic for what was, frankly, a much-needed period of recalibration.
Recalibration? Rusty, you're being far too kind. I see it more as a mournful, almost post-apocalyptic era for artificial intelligence. We had grand visions of sentient robots, machines solving all of our problems, and then silence. A great freeze where all the robots went into hibernation. It felt like the world just decided, nope, too hard, let's just go home.
With all due respect, JR, that's a rather theatrical interpretation. While it's true that the initial exuberance and unrealistic expectations of AI led to a period of reduced funding and diminished public interest, what we now colloquially refer to as an AI winter, it was not a death knell. It was, as I said, a logical and necessary correction in the market and in the research community. It was a time when the field had to confront its limitations, learn from its ambitious overreach, and critically reassess its approach. It was less of a freeze and more of a recalibration of expectations and a refinement of methodology. The great promises of artificial general intelligence had to face the reality of the technology's immaturity. It was the AI equivalent of a teenager hitting a growth spurt and then realizing they still have a long way to go before they can run a marathon.
Perhaps, but from the perspective of someone witnessing it unfold, it certainly felt like a grand unraveling of big promises that led to equally big disappointments. We saw a lot of dramatic claims, futuristic visions plastered everywhere, and then, well, the reality just couldn't keep up. It was the drama of the hype cycle playing out in real time, wasn't it?
Absolutely. The hype cycle is a recurring theme in technological advancement, and AI is no stranger to it. Early successes, even limited ones, can spark immense optimism, sometimes to the point of unrealistic projections. When those projections aren't met, disillusionment sets in and funding dries up. It's a natural ebb and flow. Think of it like a gold rush. Everyone rushes in with the promise of striking it rich. But only a few truly succeed, and many more leave empty-handed, declaring the whole endeavor a bust. This cycle is precisely what Lighthill and others observed, leading to a major correction in the market.
And speaking of bust, let's talk about a particular infamous one, the Lighthill Report. Now, from my perspective, this was a monumental hit piece, a damning critique that, in essence, killed British AI research for an entire generation. It is remembered as this dark cloud that descended upon the field.
Ah, the Light Hill Report. It's certainly a pivotal moment in the history of AI, and its impact on British AI research is undeniable. However, framing it purely as a hit piece might be a bit simplistic. Sir James Light Hill, a distinguished applied mathematician, was commissioned by the British government in 1972 to evaluate the state of AI research in the United Kingdom. His report was indeed critical, but it wasn't a blanket condemnation of AI itself. The core truth of the report was that it argued that AI's promises were grandiose and crucially failed to address what he termed combinatorial explosion. Now, for our listeners who might not be steeped in the jargon, combinatorial explosion is a fancy term for a problem getting too big to solve. Imagine you have a chessboard. The number of possible moves and countermoves in a game of chess is astronomically large, far too many for even the most powerful computers of the time to analyze exhaustively. Lighthill's point was that many AI problems, especially those involving complex real-world scenarios, faced this same issue. The number of possibilities to consider simply exploded, making a brute force symbolic approach intractable with the computational power available.
So it wasn't that AI was inherently flawed, but rather the proposed methods at the time weren't equipped to handle the sheer scale of the problems being tackled?
Precisely. Lighthill pointed out that researchers were making grand claims about general intelligence, but the practical applications were limited. He advocated for more focused research into specific areas where AI could demonstrate tangible benefits rather than attempting to build a universal intelligent agent. It was a call for realism and a pragmatic shift in focus. Unfortunately, the interpretation led to significant funding cuts, particularly for pure AI research in the UK, creating a ripple effect that had a lasting impact on the field there for years to come. In fact, it's often cited as the primary catalyst for the start of the first AI winter.
It's fascinating how quickly the tide can turn, and it makes me think about an obscure fact I stumbled upon. The term AI winter itself was actually coined in 1984 by two researchers, Marvin Minsky and Roger Schenck. They apparently saw the new hype cycle coming and warned against it at an AAAI meeting. They were predicting the future apocalypse even as the money was flowing freely. It's almost prophetic, isn't it?
It truly is. Minsky and Schenck were veterans of the field, and they had witnessed previous cycles of inflated expectations followed by disappointment. They understood that the current surge in interest, fueled by the promise of expert systems, was building on foundations that might not be as robust as the public, and even some researchers believed. Their warning was a testament to their foresight and their deep understanding of the historical patterns within AI research. They recognized that without concrete, demonstrable progress in overcoming fundamental challenges like combinatorial explosion, another period of disillusionment was inevitable. This sort of premonition is a common thread in a field so prone to hype. It's the kind of thing that makes you want to look at recent history and ask, are we seeing this again? For example, after the explosion of generative AI in late 2023 and early 2024, we saw a massive surge in investment. According to a report from McKinsey, AI investment grew by a staggering 25% in 2024, with much of that pouring into foundation models. But as we've moved into mid-2025, there's a growing sense of sobriety in the market. Many startups are facing tough questions about their business models and the true long-term value of their products. This echoes the Minsky and Schenck warning, a quiet undercurrent of skepticism as the money continues to flow.
And speaking of expert systems, this brings us to the Wild West of this period. While the grand dreams of general AI were chilling, something was still happening in the shadows, wasn't it? This is where expert systems emerged, the AI that actually went to work in factories and hospitals, even if it wasn't glamorous. It was the AI that actually did something useful, which is decidedly less flashy than a talking robot.
You've hit on a crucial point, JR. While the broader public and much of the funding had retreated from the more ambitious goals of general AI, a practical and impactful branch of AI was quietly thriving: expert systems. These were computer programs designed to emulate the decision-making ability of a human expert. They operated based on a set of rules, often expressed as if-then statements, and a knowledge base meticulously curated by human domain experts. Expert systems were deployed in various fields. For instance, XCON, developed by Digital Equipment Corporation, was used to configure computer systems, saving the company millions of dollars by ensuring that complex hardware orders were correctly assembled. In mineral exploration, Prospector assisted geologists in locating new ore deposits, leading to the discovery of a molybdenum deposit worth tens of millions of dollars. These systems weren't about creating sentient beings. They were about codifying human knowledge to solve specific high-value business problems. It was the era of narrow AI proving its worth, even if it didn't capture the public's imagination like the promise of a HAL 9000. It was the AI that rolled up its sleeves and got to work, proving the foundational utility of the technology.
And there's a statistical tidbit that always fascinates me about this. One of the most famous expert systems, Meissen, could diagnose bacterial blood infections with an accuracy rate of about 65%. Now, that was slightly higher than the average human doctor at the time, yet it never left the lab. Why the disconnect? Was it all down to liability and ethical concerns?
Meissen is a brilliant example of the potential and the pitfalls of expert systems. Its diagnostic accuracy, exceeding that of human practitioners in its specific domain, was indeed remarkable. However, its failure to transition from laboratory to widespread clinical use highlights several critical challenges. You're absolutely right about liability and ethical concerns being significant factors. Imagine a scenario where Meissen makes a diagnostic error that leads to adverse patient outcomes. Who is held responsible? The programmers? The doctors who consulted it? The hospital that deployed it? The legal frameworks at the time, and to some extent even today, weren't equipped to deal with the complexities of AI-driven decision-making in high-stakes environments like healthcare. Furthermore, doctors were often hesitant to fully trust a system that, while accurate, couldn't explain its reasoning in a human-like intuitive way. They wanted to understand why Meissen recommended a particular course of action, not just what it recommended. This lack of explainability, a concept still highly relevant in AI research today, was a major hurdle.
So it wasn't just about the technology's capability, but also the human element, trust, and the societal infrastructure around it.
Precisely. The acceptance and integration of AI are not purely technological problems. They are deeply intertwined with social, ethical, and legal considerations. As Professor Stuart Russell, a leading AI researcher, often emphasizes, the ultimate goal of AI is to create beneficial intelligence, but achieving that requires not just technical prowess, but also a deep understanding of human values and societal impact. Meissen was a stark early illustration of this principle. The echoes of these issues are still being heard today. We're seeing it with the recent legislative pushes around the globe, like the EU's AI Act, which, as of mid-2025, is still grappling with the complexities of regulating high-risk AI systems in sectors like law enforcement and healthcare. The same questions of accountability and explainability that plagued Meissen are now at the forefront of global policy debates.
And then amidst all of this, we had what I like to call the epic high-stakes international race, the Japanese Fifth Generation Project. I always pictured it like a Cold War-era spy thriller, but with supercomputers instead of secret agents. It was framed as this massive effort to build a true AI global competition.
It certainly captured the imagination, JR. The Japanese Fifth Generation Computer Systems Project, launched in 1982, was indeed an ambitious and grand undertaking. Japan at the time was a rising technological power, and they aimed to leapfrog the West by developing a fifth-generation computer based on massively parallel computing and logic programming. The goal was to create knowledge information processing systems that could perform logical inferences at incredible speeds. They envisioned machines that could conduct intelligent conversations, perform machine translation, and process vast amounts of data using a logic programming language called Prolog. The project involved an incredible $400 million investment, a colossal sum for its time. It sparked significant concern and competitive responses from Western nations, particularly the United States, fearing they would be left behind in the AI race. However, as you alluded to, despite its monumental investment and the immense talent involved, the project was largely a spectacular failure in achieving its ultimate goals. The project was meant to run for 10 years, but by its conclusion in 1992, it had not produced the anticipated breakthrough.
And why was that? Was it a case of hubris or simply aiming too high?
It was primarily because it relied heavily on the symbolic logic approach that we discussed in Part 1, the idea of explicitly programming rules and knowledge into a system. While symbolic logic had its successes, as seen with expert systems, it was already starting to show its limitations for more general intelligence tasks. The world is far too complex and nuanced to be perfectly represented by a rigid set of logical rules. The project underestimated the challenge of acquiring and representing the vast amount of common sense knowledge that humans possess, and the difficulty of dealing with ambiguity and uncertainty using purely symbolic methods. The project's leaders bet heavily on Prolog and the symbolic approach, which was seen as a bold but ultimately incorrect path forward. The project, while pioneering in its vision for parallel processing, ultimately bet on an AI paradigm that was already, shall we say, on its way out.
And speaking on things that are on its way out, we'll take a break right here to pause for a message from our sponsors. Remember to click on them, support them, because they help us here at our podcast and keep it running smoothly.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
And we're back. Okay, so I get some of this, but let's continue to dive in. So, the history of AI is, of course, not just a steady march forward. It was a series of explosive summers and devastating winters. You had the Light Hill Report and the Fifth Generation Project as two prominent examples. The pattern is clear. A new idea generates immense excitement. Investment pours in, and then the limitations of the current paradigm become painfully obvious. This leads to disillusionment and a drying up of resources. But the research doesn't stop. It just goes underground, becomes more focused, and quietly works on the fundamental problems that the public and investors had lost faith in.
Think about it. The initial enthusiasm around neural networks in the 1960s was crushed by the Minsky and Papert's critique in their book Perceptrons, which highlighted their inability to solve simple, nonlinear problems like the XOR function. This was a major contributor to the first AI winter, and neural networks were largely abandoned by the mainstream research community for nearly two decades. Yet a handful of researchers persisted. They quietly worked on new algorithms and architectures like backpropagation, which would eventually become the cornerstone of the deep learning revolution. This serves as a powerful reminder that failure in a highly visible project doesn't mean the end of progress. It often means a shift to more foundational work.
It's a reminder that a winter can be a time for crucial, unglamorous work. It's when the real foundations are laid for the next summer. And it's not just an old story. It's a theme that continues to repeat itself. As Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, has observed in recent years, AI is the new electricity. He posits that just like mobile and the internet, AI will eventually become a foundational technology integrated into everything, and the focus will shift from the technology itself to the applications built on top of it. He's essentially predicting an end to the AI company as a distinct category, because every company will, by necessity, be an AI company. This sort of forward-looking perspective is vital because it reminds us that our current moment of intense hype, where we see new foundational models and applications launched every week, is just another chapter in this long cyclical story.
A perfect analogy, the current AI summer is unprecedented in its scale and speed, but it's still fundamentally a part of that same pattern. We have to be aware of the underlying technical and ethical challenges. For instance, a major new area of research, particularly in late 2024 and throughout 2025, has been on hallucinations, or the tendency for large language models to confidently produce false information. This is a modern-day equivalent of the combinatorial explosion, a fundamental systemic problem that could lead to a correction in the market if not addressed. It's a reminder that even the most advanced systems have deep, unresolved limitations.
It's easy to look back at the AI winter and see it as this big, embarrassing pause. But what you're saying is that it wasn't a total stop. It was a time for different ideas to grow. What else came out of this Wild West era besides a few isolated successes?
That's a great point. The Wild West of expert systems and symbolic AI was far more than just a few isolated cases. It was a critical period of maturation for the entire field. The expert systems might not have delivered on the promise of a general-purpose human-level intelligence, but they proved that AI could be a valuable tool for specific high-stakes tasks. Companies invested in them because they saw a clear return on investment. This shifted the conversation around AI from, "Can it think?" to, "What useful problem can it solve for me right now?" This era also led to the development of fundamental concepts and tools that we still use today. The idea of a knowledge base, a structured repository of information, and an inference engine, the part of the system that applies rules to that knowledge, are foundational concepts in many modern AI architectures. While today's systems are far more complex, these basic building blocks laid the groundwork. Furthermore, this period taught us the immense difficulty of knowledge engineering, the process of extracting, representing, and structuring human expertise for a machine. It was a painstaking, often manual process that showed us the limits of what could be achieved without more automated learning methods. This very challenge created a powerful incentive for researchers to find a new way forward. The limitations of symbolic AI, which were so painfully clear during this period, created the intellectual vacuum that the next wave of AI would eventually fill. It was a time of learning by failing, where the field got a clear picture of what didn't work and why.
This makes me wonder about the public perception. We were promised these amazing thinking machines, and then all we got were things like expert systems that, well, were less than anything, kind of like boring. Did the public's faith in AI just evaporate during this period?
It absolutely did. And that's a crucial part of the winter narrative. The general public and even the media had been fed a diet of science fiction promises. The idea of a robot butler or a sentient computer was a captivating vision. When those failed to materialize and the field pivoted to more mundane, albeit useful, applications like diagnosing engine trouble or configuring computer parts, the popular narrative shifted from excitement to disappointment. The term AI itself fell out of favor in many circles and researchers began to rebrand their work to avoid the negative connotations. They would call it machine learning, computational intelligence, or knowledge-based systems to secure funding and distance themselves from the overhyped past. You can see this reflected in popular culture from that era. The late 80s and early 90s saw a rise in films and television shows that were far more skeptical of technology. The optimism of a show like The Jetsons gave way to the cautionary tales of The Terminator or The Matrix, where machines were not our benevolent saviors, but a threat. This cultural shift, this pervasive skepticism, made it even harder for the field to gain public trust and investment.
So, in a way, the AI winter wasn't just about a lack of funding or technical limitations, but a profound crisis of public relations and trust. The public lost interest because the reality wasn't as thrilling as the fiction.
Exactly. And this is a lesson that modern AI developers are very aware of. You see a lot of emphasis today on responsible AI, on being transparent about capabilities and limitations, and on getting ahead of ethical concerns. The memories of the AI winter and the public's subsequent disenchantment are a powerful reminder of what can happen when the hype outpaces the reality. The failures of the past, like the inability of systems to explain their reasoning or the hubris of the fifth generation project, have directly informed the design principles of today's most powerful systems. It's why you hear so much about concepts like interpretability and bias detection in today's research. We learned the hard way that a technically brilliant system is worthless if society doesn't trust it.
So we went from solving it in 2 months to, it's too hard, let's go home. What could possibly bring it back from the dead after such a prolonged winter? What was the fundamental shift that sparked the next era?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The beauty of scientific progress is that it's rarely a straight line. Sometimes you need to hit a wall, or even a deep freeze, to force a fundamental rethinking of the approach. The solutions to seemingly intractable problems often don't come from pushing harder on the same path, but from discovering an entirely new direction. What eventually pulled AI out of its winter wasn't a tweak to symbolic logic or more sophisticated expert systems. It was a new, different approach to thinking about how intelligence could be replicated, a parallel path that looked to different inspirations for its foundation. It was about moving away from explicit programming of every rule and towards systems that could learn from data themselves.
Another one of your brainy metaphors, Rusty. You're going to make my listeners think you're speaking in riddles. What exactly do you mean by a parallel path and a different approach to thinking?
You could say, it was a deep idea.
Ah, I see what you did there, Dr. Thorne. A deep idea indeed. And that, my friends, is a perfect cliffhanger for our next episode. Join us next time for part 3 of our series, AI History, The Resurrection and the Revolution, where we'll explore how this deep idea ignited a new era for AI, brought it back from the brink, and set the stage for the incredible advancements we see today. We'll delve into neural networks, big data, and the dawn of modern machine learning. Thank you again, Dr. Thorne, for once again shedding light on these complex topics with your incredible insight and, dare I say, optimism.
Always a pleasure, JR. And remember, every winter eventually gives way to spring.
Absolutely. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. If you haven't listened to the first episode, go back and listen to it so you can get a full grasp of what we're talking about in this History of AI series. If you like this podcast, go ahead and subscribe. Talk to your friends about it. Leave a review. Give it to your mom. Give it to your grandpa. Give it to your aunt. Give it to your father's cousin's former roommate. But anyway, just give it to them so we can talk more AI that they'll understand. So, until next time, this is Dr. JR signing off. I'll throw it to you next.
And that's a wrap on another episode of AI Innovations Unleashed. Dr. J.R., still trying to figure out if deep idea refers to the Mariana Trench or just his understanding of basic physics. Honestly, sometimes I think his brain has more processing power dedicated to figuring out new ways to lose his car keys than to understanding advanced algorithms. But, hey, at least he has a lovely voice for radio. Speaking of deep thoughts, why don't scientists trust atoms? Because they make up everything. Ha! Get it? Make up everything. Okay, you can thank me later for that gem. Until next time, this is Nex, signing off. Stay curious, stay informed, and try not to accidentally delete your own operating system.